Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Maria Ritter tells us about a newly developed police force in Iran and the rules they will enforce throughout the country.
Iran has a new morality police unit to observe its citizens. Iran's police chief, Hossein Sajjadinia, said the 7,000 officers, male and female, will make sure women follow Islamic dress codes. They will also stop dangerous driving and noise pollution, he said. Some in Iran consider popular music to be a form of noise pollution. The new police unit appears to be aimed mostly at women. It is enforcing laws that require women to cover their hair and bodies. According to the U.S. State Department, women of all religious groups in Iran are expected to follow Islamic dress rules in public. That includes covering their hair and wearing loose clothing that fully covers the body. Members of the morality police will not wear police uniforms. This allows them to watch people without showing they are part of the police. Iran's police chief said morality officers will not take action themselves. Instead, they will give information, such as license plate numbers, to regular police who will follow up on reported violations. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani criticized the announcement, according to the BBC and foreignpolicy.com. The president promised during his election campaign to give people more freedom. Rouhani said government's first duty is to respect dignity and allow people to express their personalities. The announcement also drew criticism on social media. Big Brother is watching you, one person wrote on Twitter. BBC reported some people created a phone app to report locations of morality police so women can avoid them. An app is a computer program on phones and computers that allow people to get information, music, or other material. I'm Mario Ritter.
Next, Christopher Jones Cruz reports on a method some people are using to obtain permanent resident visas in the United States.
The number of people from other countries, especially China, who want to invest in the United States in exchange for a permanent resident visa reached its highest level in 2015. The program is known as EB-5, or Employment-Based Fifth Initiative. It was created in 1990, during the presidency of George W. Bush, and supported by both major political parties. The United States Citizenship and Immigration Services says the program gives permanent resident status to those who invest at least $1 million in a new project that will create or preserve at least 10 full-time jobs in the United States within about 2 years. The agency says a foreign citizen needs to invest just $500,000 if the project is in a targeted employment area, which includes some rural areas and areas with high joblessness. Critics of the program say much of the investment takes place in wealthy cities like Dallas, New York, and Washington. The U.S. CIS reported there were 17,691 requests for EB-5 visas in 2015. In 2013, there were 6,554 requests. Experts say the reason for the sharp increase last year is rich people were worried that the program would be canceled. But in December, it was extended for 10 months. The U.S. CIS told Congress that an estimated $8.7 billion has been invested into the U.S. economy through the EB-5 program since October 1, 2012. It estimates 35,140 jobs have been created for U.S. workers through foreign investment via the EB-5 program. The Wall Street Journal newspaper recently reported that more than 80% of the EB-5 visas are given to Chinese investors. The newspaper reports many investors are given two or three visas and use them to give family members permanent resident status. Without the program, many of them would have to wait many years before they could legally enter and live in the U.S. The U.S. State Department reports some Chinese citizens who have asked for visas without taking part in the program have been waiting since 2001. In 2014, the Washington City paper reported that Chinese take part in the program not to make money, but to be able to educate their children in the United States. Another reason, the paper reported, is the ability to own private property, which can be difficult in China. The Government Accountability Office reported last year that some people who have asked for or been given an EB-5 visa might have lied about where they earned their money. The GAO report said some of the money that is invested in job-creating businesses may come from the drug trade, human trafficking, or other criminal activities. The report said the U.S. CIS should increase its efforts to prevent and find fraud in the program, and should ask people who are applying for an EB-5 visa to give more information. It also said U.S. CIS should study the program to see how many new jobs are created. U.S. CIS said it agreed with the GAO recommendations. Republican Senator Charles E. Grassley of Iowa is a frequent critic of the program. He recently told the New York Times, "It's no secret that the program has long been riddled with corruption and national security vulnerabilities." Last week, he led a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing that investigated the reported abuse of the targeted employment area part of the program. Senator Dianne Feinstein is a Democrat from California. She has said, "I don't believe that America should be selling visas and eventually citizenship." And she said, "The right to immigrate should not be for sale." Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, has supported the EB-5 program since it began. But he recently called for major changes. In a statement, he said, "Fraud and abuse cannot be tolerated, no matter where it occurs. Even when there is no indication of fraud, the incentives that Congress created to direct EB-5 investment to underserved areas are regularly abused. Given the significant problems plaguing this program, I will continue to push for meaningful reform. Without reform, I believe the time has come for the program to end." Carolyn Lee is an attorney and managing partner at the EB-5 group at the Miller Mayer Law Firm in Ithaca, New York. The firm says it has helped raise more than $3 billion in EB-5 funding for projects in at least 11 American states. It has helped investors gain more than 5,000 visas. It has been involved with the program for 20 years. She told VOA, "There's no question that the program can be improved." She says Congress needs to watch the program more closely. And she said background investigations should be more thorough. But she disagrees with Senator Feinstein that the program sells visas and citizenship to rich people. "I don't think it is quite fair to characterize it in that way. We confer immigration benefits based on a number of factors. The policy goal that is furthered with this program is U.S. economic growth," she said. She says visas and citizenship are an asset, an ideal, almost sacred. What do you want to give for this national asset? I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The Indian government wants a valuable jewel given to Great Britain returned to India. Anna Mateo has more.
The Indian government has launched an effort to recover a priceless diamond from Britain. The Kohinoor diamond was given to Britain's Queen Victoria as a present in 1850, when India was a British colony. The diamond is now kept as part of the crown jewels in the Tower of London. Ownership of the Kohinoor was the subject of a hearing this week in India's highest court. Solicitor General Rajit Kumar told the Supreme Court Monday that the diamond belonged to Great Britain. It was given to the British as compensation for help in the Sikh Wars, he said. The Kohinoor is not a stolen object. His comments shocked many Indians. In a written statement, India's Ministry of Culture said the government does not agree with Kumar's position. The statement said the government would like to bring back the diamond in what it called an amicable manner. Media reports say India, Pakistan, Iran, and Afghanistan have each tried to claim ownership of the Kohinoor. In recent years, the four nations have demanded its return from Britain. The mother of Queen Elizabeth II wore the diamond in her crown prior to her death in 2002. The name Kohinoor means Mountain of Light in Persian. Several media sources reported the diamond to be worth as much as $200 million. I'm Anna Mateo.
Next, Dan Friedel has this week's Science in the News report.
A group of researchers at Rice University in Texas are learning how to help the brain heal from serious injuries. Brain cells, called neurons, connect with each other through chemical and electrical signals. They form networks. They use proteins to grow. The researchers want to find out if they can direct the growth of neurons and help them form these important links. If the researchers can understand this process, they think they will be able to help people who have suffered brain injuries stimulate new nerve tissue. Amina Kutub is a bioengineer who studies the brain. She studies what happens when a person's brain does not receive enough oxygen. When the brain lacks oxygen, it is having a stroke. Kutub says scientists used to think brain cells were static. That means everyone was born with a limited number of brain cells, and the number of those cells could never increase. But a lot of new research shows we're able to regenerate nerve cells, she says. Kutub works with an electrical engineer and a biologist on the research team. The goal is to learn how to repair parts of the brain that are damaged in a stroke. Brains can be damaged by a degenerative disease like Alzheimer's disease, or in a traumatic injury, such as getting hit in the head. The networks the brain forms are called neural networks, and they are complex. Preneurons are even harder to understand.
They form very elaborate and beautiful networks, and the different network structures relate to what they do, their function. And what we're trying to do is figure out what are the chemical signals that lead to a particular structure, and in turn, how does that structure relate to the electrical signals you get when you have active neurons?
The Rice research is supported in part by President Barack Obama's $300 million Brain Initiative, which is modeled after the Human Genome Project. Kutub says the research opens up a huge door to better understanding the brain. A small, tropical fish is contributing to the research. It is called a zebrafish because of its stripes. Zebrafish embryos are being used by the research team because their embryos are transparent. That way they can see a living brain work. Kutub says that is not possible with humans. In zebrafish, we can watch the neural progenitor cells become neurons. The research program will create a computer model. That model will help researchers get a better idea of how the brain works. One day, they may be able to provide better treatment for people with brain injuries. I'm Dan Friedel.
Is it really such a bad thing not to be admitted into well-known U.S. universities like Harvard or Yale? Some experts say that it is not. Here again is Dan Friedel.
Fewer than 5% of the students who applied to Stanford University in California were accepted this year. About 6% of the applicants to Yale University in Connecticut were admitted. But one writer says if you did not get into a school like Stanford, Yale, or Harvard University, do not despair. Jillian Berman writes for MarketWatch.com. She says students shouldn't panic if they don't get a spot. It is still possible to be successful. Stacy Dale and Alan Kruger wrote a paper in 2011 that says students who apply to universities like Stanford and Harvard but do not get in are likely to do well anywhere. The researchers say that confidence and ambition may predict success better than other factors. Those other factors include good grades, high SAT scores, and activities out of school. The researchers say people who apply to these selective schools do well even if they are not accepted to schools like Princeton University or Dartmouth College. Berman wrote a story last year saying a study by the Brookings Institution might be more valuable than other lists. It ranks schools based on how much value they provide their students. The Brookings list shows how much more money students would earn graduating from one school over another. The list includes small colleges and technical schools that focus on agriculture, engineering, nursing, and medical jobs. The idea about ambition and confidence does not always apply to minority students. The Dale and Kruger study says minority students should reach for these selective schools. That is because they can make social connections that may be useful for advancing their careers in the future. The list created by Brookings fits with another story posted on the website 538.com. The story is called "Shut Up About Harvard." The writer is Ben Castleman. He says television and newspaper stories about universities fail to reflect real and honest college experience. Very few people attend a university lined with trees and brick buildings. These days, college is often a part-time or two-year experience. Students live at home and commute to classes. Movies that take place on a college campus, he says, are more fiction than truth. More truthful is a picture of an American university student who attends class part-time while working and raising children. The most popular courses are no longer literature and philosophy. The most popular are business and healthcare. It is exciting to read about a student who is accepted by 8 Ivy League schools, but these writers say those students will be successful anywhere. They say that students who need help getting to class and completing a degree are a greater concern. A professor from the University of Wisconsin spoke with Castleman. She says most of the stories about higher education in the U.S. skip the most important issue. People can't afford to spend enough time in college to actually finish their darn degrees. But if they do, Castleman writes, the degree remains the most likely path to a decent-paying job. That is why students can be successful, even if they do not get into a school like Harvard. I'm Dan Friedel.
Award-winning filmmaker Richard Linklater looks back at college in the 1980s in his new humorous film, Everybody Wants Some. The new movie is not a sequel to Boyhood. That 2014 Linklater film followed 12 years of a boy's life as he grew to adulthood. Everybody Wants Some is a much lighter look at young adults.
Two rules: no booze in this house. Number two, no girls upstairs in those bedrooms.
Everybody Wants Some takes place over one weekend at a college in Texas. The year is 1980. A group of athletes, or jocks, gather at the school before classes start. They are there to attend baseball practice and to party. Blake Jenner stars as Jake, a new player on the team.
You have not earned teammate status yet.
Who the hell are you?
Jake Bradford.
And until you do, you're nobody.
Richard Linklater said this college comedy was based on his own college experience.
It's just such a unique time in your life, you know. You're away from home, all the freedom you're confronted with, and to try to figure out who you are in the world.
Quentin Johnson plays a teammate named Dale. He said the young actors had to put themselves into a different time.
We're a bit more disconnected as college students today. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. There's Bumble now. I don't even know what Bumble is. There's Tinder. You know, all these different things that kind of substitute for real human interaction.
Actor Wyatt Russell also plays one of the athletes in the film. He described how they made the time and the relationships seem real.
We did the wardrobe, we listened to the music, and then you just kind of play with your friends.
But some things do not change, says actor Glenn Powell, who plays Finnegan. In the 1980s, like today, college students were testing the limits of a new freedom.
It's about a bunch of guys who think they know who they are and don't, but are confident in whatever version that is that they're choosing at the moment. Bang, bang.
Richard Linklater's film representation of the American college experience is a happy one.
You got to hang out with some fun, eccentric, kind of cool people who seem like your friends, and it was just a good time. You know, you kind of absorbed their energy and their spirit, and it was a good place to be.
I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.